for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Most U.S. hens raised for eggs and hogs raised for meat live in close quarters, according to the Humane Society. 10 states now have animal welfare laws trying to change that. With me in the studio to talk about what these new rules mean for farmers, hens, livestock, and food prices, Paul Shapiro with the Humane Society of the United States, Paul Souder with the American Egg Board, and joining us by phone from California, David Pearson with the Los Angeles Times. I do hope you'll call us, weigh in with your own opinions, 800-433-8850. You can email us at drshow.org, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And welcome to all of you.
Thanks, Diane. It's great to see you.
Thanks, Diane. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Diane.
And to you, Paul Shapiro, give us a little background on this law that California has now put into action.
Thanks, Diane. It's important to recognize the context that Californians passed Proposition 2 in 2008. For decades, the egg industry has had essentially no rules on how it treats animals. And while many people know that the egg industry is a leading cause of salmonella, fewer people before Prop 2 knew about these animal welfare problems associated with the egg industry. So, for example, 9 out of 10 egg cartons in our country come from birds who are locked in cages that are so small, the birds are unable even to spread their wings for essentially their entire lives. Each one of these animals has less space than an iPad on which to live for more than a year before she's slaughtered. It's tough to imagine a more miserable existence, and not only does that type of extreme confinement cause lots of animal suffering, it also causes very serious food safety risks. The evidence is quite clear that these cage confinement hen houses tend to have more salmonella than cage-free hen houses do. So Californians voted in favor of Prop 2 both to help prevent animal cruelty and to improve food safety risk. And what they did was pass this law in the 2008 election cycle, which says that egg-laying hens, breeding pigs, and calves who are used for veal have to be able to stand up, lie down, turn around, and extend their limbs. It's a very modest law. It's hard to imagine something more modest, yet it encountered fierce opposition from the animal agriculture industry. But still, more than a huge majority, two-thirds of Californians voted in favor of this law, and exit polling showed that it was a nonpartisan vote. Republicans and Democrats alike, urban, rural voters, men, women, white, black, Asian, Latino, majorities of every major demographic group in the state supported this law, and the law just took effect this January 1st.
Dave Pearson, Paul Shapiro talked about these so-called battery cages. Describe one for us.
So these are essentially wire enclosures that allow thousands and thousands of birds to be confined together. And they're cramped in there in several tiers, and will essentially spend their whole productive life in these spaces, essentially producing eggs.
So it's about 8x8, is that correct?
That's correct, and this new law would essentially double the size leg hens.
So it would not demand that all egg-laying hens be free from cages. It would simply enlarge the size of the cage. Is that correct, David?
So farmers are following essentially the spirit of guidelines set by the California Department of Food and Agriculture in 2013, which requires a minimum of 116 square inches of space per bird. And so some farmers are interpreting that as a reason to open the hen houses up, so that the birds are free to roam. Others are interpreting that as opening up the cages a little bit more, for example, cutting out the sides so that they adhere to that 116 square inches per bird.
Paul Shapiro, how significant do you see this law and this expansion of the size of the cage?
Sure, Diane. Well, Proposition 2 was a historic landmark. I mean, because the egg industry for years had had no rules as to how it treated animals, there was this moral race to the bottom, where egg producers were competing with each other by essentially trying to slash costs by increase, but at the expense of increasing animal cruelty and food safety risk. So for the largest agricultural state in the country, California, and one of the biggest egg production states, California, to adopt these rules that require at least some modest improvements in the treatment of these animals truly is historic. There are a few laws that have taken effect on January 1st, though. One, as David notes, is the California Department of Food and Ag's regulation for food safety. That does require 116 square inches. But that's not the same as Proposition 2 or what's called AB 1437, which is a law passed in 2010 by the California legislature that requires that all shell eggs sold in California be produced in compliance with Prop 2. And so And so Prop 2 really is a higher standard than the egg safety rule. And you see a lot of egg producers, as David correctly pointed out, going cage-free in response to this. Not necessarily because the California Department of Ag requires it, but because Prop 2 and AB 1437 move the egg industry in that direction.
And turning to you, Paul Souder, I gather egg producers are arguing that the law is too costly. It unfairly applies to out-of-state production as well.
Diane, that is really not exactly the truth, because we as egg producers want to produce eggs in the most humane way that we can for our animals. And any state can put into any law that they want to put into. And HSUS and the egg industry were working to get federal legislation in place that would have made it a level playing field for all of us across the whole country. So egg producers in some way are in tune with what HSUS wants. And we all want to be able to produce eggs that are safe, humanely cared for from our animals, and that is affordable for all consumers to buy.
So what are you saying? You're waiting for a federal law, or that's what you'd prefer? How long might that take?
Well, unfortunately, we were working for 2 years in step with HSUS to get federal legislation. Unfortunately, Congress did not pass that for us last year. So that is now past us, and California now has their law in place for 116, which is what we're all living by today and which producers are abiding to sell eggs into California.
And so how are you feeling about that?
The producers are going to do what they need to do to supply California with eggs. And there are producers inside the state of California that are producing at the 116. There is egg farmers outside the state that are producing eggs at 116 to ship into California.
And how much is this going to cost the egg producers to implement?
I really can't answer that question because I am not shipping eggs into California at the 116. I'm shipping eggs into California that are cage-free, that are of a higher standard than the 116.
David Pearson, what would you estimate it's going to cost the egg producers?
Well, I mean, the investment is obviously going to be in the hundreds of millions. I mean, for example, a farmer that I interviewed recently took out a new line of credit in his bank. It's going to cost him $1 million to upgrade his 5 barns. So it's a significant investment for farmers. They had several years to prepare for this. If they want to stay in business here, they're going to have to do it.
Paul Shapiro, what is the evidence that hens grown in these so-called battery cages really do produce salmonella?
Great question, Diane. So these studies are available online at humanesociety.org/salmonella. And what you can see is that there's overwhelming evidence that cage confinement operations tend to have higher rates of salmonella than cage-free hen houses do. And there are a lot of reasons why scientists theorize about this. One, there's oftentimes greater concentrations of animals, meaning greater concentration of manure. There's increased stress for the animals because they're so overcrowded, which compromises immunological function. And there's also the difficulty of cleaning the cage equipment in between flocks. So there's lots of reasons why that is. But when you look at what the Europeans did, much of that was to improve food safety. And when you look at what Blue Ribbon panels like the Pew Commission on Industrial Farm Animal Production here in the United States, which included everybody from former Secretary of Agriculture Dan Glickman to the governor of Kansas, scientists, veterinarians, and more, they unanimously concluded after researching this issue that the egg industry ought to convert to cage-free, both from a food safety perspective and from an animal welfare perspective.
And what do you think about that poll, Souder?
Diane, I would say that the egg industry has been under an FDA program since 2010, and we have had no issues of egg safety since that point in time and of any outbreaks of the egg industry. And as my personal being in the egg business for the third generation, in Pennsylvania, we've had an egg safety program for over 20 years, and we have had no issues with egg safety issues with any of our eggs.
Paul Souder, he's president of Souder Eggs, chair of the American Egg Board. We'll take a short break here. When we come back, we'll talk further and take your calls.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the investment firm of Raymond James, wealth management, banking, and capital markets. Learn more at lifewellplan.com. From Cigna, a global health service company dedicated to helping people improve their health, well-being, and sense of security at Cigna.com. And from the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a better life. More information is available at SciSimsFoundation.org.
And welcome back. We're talking about new law in California that will provide for more humane treatment for hens, calves, pigs. Let's talk about pigs a little bit, Paul Shapiro. What is their, what has been their state of living, and what might it become?
Sure. Well, the pork industry has a very sordid track record when it comes to the issue of animal welfare. The vast majority of the breeding pigs in our country are locked in what the industry calls gestation crates. These are small, 2-foot-wide cages, barely larger than the animal's own bodies, in which they're unable even to turn around. And these aren't temporary holding crates. This is 24/7 their entire lives, where they're kept for essentially 4 years in a state of virtual immobilization. The animals go insane from this. They develop pressure sores from laying in the same position over and over again. Their muscles atrophy. And most people who look at this recognize instinctively that it's just cruel and inhumane to lock an animal in what's essentially an iron maiden for her entire life. And so Californians were right to ban this type of animal abuse, and numerous other states have now done this as well. In fact, it's not just states that are taking action on this, but while the pork industry, the pork industry's leadership, like their trade association, the National Pork Producers Council, has been dragging its feet and defending this type of animal abuse, many of the biggest pork buyers, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, Costco, Safeway, and more, have have been telling their pork producers they want them to stop confining pigs in these type of tiny cages because it's just so extreme.
And David Pearson, what about calves?
I'm actually not familiar with the calves. I've been looking at the egg issue, but I believe California has been doing sort of leading in that way.
Go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, Diane. So, the veal industry has been the subject of intense scrutiny for many decades over its treatment of animals. Similar to the pork industry, the veal industry has kept calves locked in tiny crates, often chained by the neck. These animals are taken from their mothers, generally on the first day of their lives. Their mothers are dairy cows, and the dairy industry has no use for male calves, and so many of the male calves born into the dairy industry become veal calves. And they are put in these crates called veal crates, and they can't turn around for 4 months, and then they're sent to slaughter. When these calves are taken out of their crates, I mean, many of them have difficulty even walking because their muscles aren't developed. They haven't really walked in their lives. It's a very sad state of affairs.
So what will this new law mean for the calves?
So what Proposition 2 says is that these calves have to at least be able to turn around, and so that is an important advancement for these calves. It improves their welfare. It doesn't necessarily ensure idyllic conditions, but what we have seen is that unlike in the pork industry, where the trade associations are still defending extreme confinement of farm animals, the veal industry's trade group has urged all veal producers to stop using these tiny crates and to state that the calves ought to be kept in what's known as group housing, where they can walk around, engage in social behavior with other calves. And about 70% of the veal industry now has abandoned that form of extreme confinement that immobilizes the calves. And by 2017, they're projected to be done with it altogether. So in many ways, the veal industry, paradoxically, is actually ahead of the pork industry when it comes to animal welfare now.
Interesting. All right. Here's an email from Gary. This is for you, David Pearson. Do these hen laws apply to all animal products sold in the state? For example, McDonald's chicken nuggets.
No, these apply only for shell eggs. Shell eggs, right. So, I mean, there's a huge market for liquid eggs, and that does not apply to that.
Now, Paul Souder, is the price of eggs also rising, in part because of these new laws?
Well, the egg prices go up and down based upon the time of the year, the demand. We're going through an extraordinarily high demand for eggs over the last 12 months due to everyone wanting more protein in their diet. So, you know, the egg prices have been rising last year before this law ever took place. They're right now currently in California. Their prices are higher than what they normally are. And that's due to the fact that the demand for those eggs in California is exceeding the supply. It's not going to take long until the egg farmers will get their supply in line and the prices will come back down to a more normal level.
What do you think of that, David Pearson?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been described to be sort of a perfect storm of market forces right now for egg prices, because on one hand you have Prop 2 coming online, but also you have rising consumption of egg. You know, it's supposed to reach a 7-year high this year because meat, specifically beef prices, are at all time high. So people are turning to eggs for protein. But secondly, export demand for eggs has been going up significantly because of problems with avian flu in Mexico and Canada, which are our two biggest egg export markets. And then you have the drought complicating things as well. So we're seeing prices soar in California. They were trading this week on the wholesale market for about a $2.87 for a dozen large eggs. This time last year, you know, it was only $1.20.
Interesting. Paul Souder.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add what David there said about the exports, but also the consumption for individual consumption in the United States. We're at an all-time 30-year high of about 264 eggs per person in the United States. So, like I say, that's a 30-year high. And it's all due to this whole demand for protein that the consumers are looking to get, and the fact that breakfast is the most important meal of the day.
How much shortage is there right now in the state of California? Do you know?
I do not know.
All right.
I just said that doesn't appear to be much of a shortage. The producers are coming through so far.
Does that mean, in your view, David Pearson, that people are willing to pay these higher prices for cage-free or larger caged eggs?
It's unclear just yet. I mean, it's been a few weeks, but Paul can speak to this. I think eggs is one of those things that people, like gasoline, just can't live without.
Eggs are a relatively price inelastic commodity in that when prices go up or down, it doesn't tend to affect the purchases of them in the same way that, for example, beef might. At the same time, one of the reasons why eggs had gotten so cheap in the country was because of this moral race to the bottom where egg producers were cramming animals into cages in more and more crowded conditions. And so there has to be some type of a correction for that as we start to have some rules over how laying hens and other farm animals can be treated.
I keep thinking about the size of those cages and the size of the animals and wondering what kind of an outcry there would be were it dogs and cats we were talking about.
You're so right, Diane. If the victims of this type of cruelty were dogs and cats, the perpetrators would likely be thrown in jail. In fact, we treat farm animals in our country worse than we treat the most heinous criminals in our society. Murderers and rapists, we don't put them in cages where they can't even turn around for their entire lives, where they can't lift their arms. Yet the chickens, the pigs, the calves in our country, what crime have they committed to be subjected to this type of extreme confinement where they're immobilized for essentially their entire lives? It's just cruel, it's inhumane, and it needs to stop.
Diane, I have to agree with Paul, except I'll take exception in that since 2002, the egg industry, a good majority of the egg farmers were under a science-based program that gave us guidelines as far as the amount of space we need to give our chickens, the amount of air and all the attributes of animal welfare was under a science-based program that we've been under since 2002. So we have been living under a program that's not emotionally based, but science-based, and it's all done by a scientific committee.
Well, give me a sense of what that scientific committee has said in terms of the amount of space that those chickens need.
Sure. Back when this program all started, most of the farmers were putting their chickens in at 48 square inches per chicken, and their minimum that they said we should be under was 67, and that was started in 2002, and it was a stepped-in program over four different steps, till we got to the 67, so we didn't disrupt the supply of eggs through the country.
But, it's interesting because, as I understand it, this California law was passed in 2008. Mm-hmm. So producers were on notice. And yet, here we are 6 years later, mm-hmm. and what?
That's exactly right, Diane. When Proposition 2 was written, it purposefully had a six-year phase-in period so that producers would have time to come into compliance. And instead of using that time, some egg producers just sued. They filed four lawsuits against California to try to delay or nullify Prop 2, and they lost all four of them. Something similar happened in Europe with their law that took effect 3 years ago. But in short, Paul is right. Paul Sauter is right that the egg producers have tried to move in the direction of having slightly increased spaces through that program. But we shouldn't forget that when Paul talks about 67 square inches, for those of you, if you're like me and you're not a mathlete, you don't know what 67 square inches is, keep in mind that a sheet of paper, an 8.5 by 11 paper, that's 93 square inches. So the improvement for the egg industry was going to less than a sheet of paper's worth of space per bird. Now, companies like Paul Sauter's are also moving in a much better direction by selling a lot of cage-free eggs and moving toward higher welfare systems that go beyond what those voluntary requirements are.
Eventually, all the chickens will be cage-free, Paul Sauter?
I'm going to say it's going to be up to the consumer, If the consumer wants all cage-free and stops buying the other eggs that we produce, we'll stop producing
them. I would think it would be less expensive to have cage-free hens.
No.
Why not?
No, because there's a lot more management, there's a lot more goes into cage-free eggs, and you don't get near the volume out of a housing that are cage-free versus the houses where we have them in at 67 square inches. It's about almost a 50% more cost increase to produce cage-free than it does our current conventional housing that we have at 67.
Paul Shapiro shaking his head.
The United Egg Producers did its own study in which they found that the cost was 25% increase to go to cage-free systems, not 50%. At the same time, Paul was right that the reason why most birds in our country, most laying hens in our country, are crammed into cages is because it does cut costs. When you overcrowd animals, you may get fewer eggs per bird because of their increased stress, but you get more eggs per square foot, and that's why the egg industry does this. But we're not talking about really dramatic cost increases here. I mean, keep in mind, egg prices during the Prop 2 campaign, because of a variety of reasons, increased by 40% over in the country, and there was lots of price fixing allegations in the egg industry. Many egg producers ended up settling class action lawsuits over those price fixing allegations for tens of millions of dollars. But when it went up 40%, you didn't see egg producers crying over it. You saw them celebrating over their increased profits. So when you look at a cost increase of, let's say, 25%, which the United Egg Producer says it would be to go to entirely cage-free systems, you see that that's within the realm of what's has been normal in the egg industry anyway.
You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. All right, let's take a call from Long Beach, California. Hi, Lenka, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you, Diane. And I wanted to express that I was actively involved as a signature gatherer for Prop 2 in California back in 2008, and I now do regret it. Here's why, and it will lead to my question to the panel. The language I'm hearing right now from the panel and everyday people is much like the language might have been 200 years ago when slavery was predominant and commonplace. The language, the conversations of the businessmen and landholders would have been, again, what I'm hearing now, supply, demand, maximizing dollar signs, whereas maybe the visionaries back then were the ones that were talking about liberation. So, here we are now, fast forward 200 years later. Why are we not calling this movement for what it truly is, which is a social justice movement involving the most persecuted beings on this earth?
All right. David Pearson, you might want to comment.
I think you bring a valid point, but, we can't ignore the scope and size of this industry as well. And it exists, and the reality is in America, we have a massive farm industry that supplies cheap and readily available food to the majority of Americans. What we're seeing here is essentially the front line in debate on how we go about doing that business, and do we take into account animal welfare more? Do we sacrifice prices to do this? In terms of social justice, I think this is definitely part of the conversation more now when we discuss our food supply.
Let's go to Mike in Phoenix, Arizona. You're on the air.
Hi, my question was for Paul Shapiro, and I was just wondering if you can talk a little bit about the psychological effects that these intensive confinement systems have on the animals.
Thanks, Mike. That's kind of you. And you're absolutely right. So if you look at these animals, the chickens, the pigs, the calves, these are social, intelligent animals. And they have interests that matter to them. They have personalities. And this confinement that they're subjected to takes an enormous physical toll on their bodies, for sure, but it also takes a psychological toll. And so what you look at, for example, in the pork industry is that many of these pigs, when they're put inside of these crates, originally they fight. They fight against their confinement. They bite the bars incessantly. But eventually, once they realize they're never getting out of that cage, they give up. Exactly, Diane. They experience learned what would be in humans clinical depression and called learned helplessness. And the fact is that we shouldn't have agricultural systems that subject animals to such extraordinary deprivation that they are clinically depressed at all times and that they go insane.
How do we measure that depression, Paul Sound?
I measure the eggs in the health and the welfare of the chicken and the amount of productivity that a chicken gives me in its lifetime. And we're now, with the animal welfare program that we're under right now currently, we're getting the most eggs out of our chickens that we ever got out of in the history. And I've been in this business for 50 years. And the mortality is lower, the egg quality is better, and we're getting more eggs out of our chicken today than we did ever.
All right, short break here, more calls, your emails. When we come back, stay with us.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education, dedicated to empowering education changemakers across America every day to improve the learning process. Learn more at edutopia.org. And from Joyce V. Hale, seeking a world challenged and invigorated through a deeper understanding of ideas.
On the next Fresh Air, Jack Miles reflects on religion and secularism after having edited the new Norton Anthology of World Religions. The anthology collects ancient primary texts from Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism. Miles is a former Jesuit seminarian and author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book God, A Biography. Join us.
Welcome back. Here is an email from John in St. Louis. He says, Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution grants lawmaking powers affecting interstate and international commerce to the federal government. California's egg laws appear to be in direct conflict with that. What about that, David Pearson?
Missouri, in February of last year, sued California using the Interstate Commerce Clause. Five other states followed suit, and what ultimately happened up until now, in October, a federal judge decided that, she decided to dismiss it because she believed the clause did not apply here because it did not impact the ordinary people, the people of those states. It only impacted the egg producers of that state, and that now is being appealed.
Diane and John, California certainly can't tell other states what to do, but California can regulate what happens within its own borders, including the California marketplace. California and numerous other states have their own laws about what can and cannot be sold within their own borders. Iowa egg producers or Missouri egg producers don't have to sell to California if they don't want to. Right. But if they do want to, then they will have to comply with the laws of the marketplace within California.
And here's a question from Pamela. Will the new rules squeeze smaller farmers out of the egg business? Paul Souter.
No, because again, like Paul just said, a producer has the option to sell to California or not sell to California, and a smaller producer outside of the state is probably not going to go to California before or after this law has been put in place.
All right, and here is from Breezy Acres Farm. We are egg producers and produce local cage-free, free-range eggs. Cage-free and free-range local eggs have been bringing us $3.50 a dozen for years, and we sell all we produce. Paul Souter, that was a question I asked you earlier. That is, you know, how much would you have to charge for all cage-free eggs?
Well, again, once you get started in the cage-free business, it's not going to increase the cost because you're going to be all set up with your systems. And going back to this local producer here, my biggest concern would be is for free-range chickens with the avian flu that we're experiencing throughout Canada and United States right now, putting chickens outside in a range is a real risk to the whole chicken industry.
Why?
Because of avian flu being contacted from wild birds. A lot of your wild birds, geese, have avian flu, and if they come in contact with one of our chickens, then it can be real devastating to the whole food supply in this country.
Has that happened, Paul?
Well, it's important to know the difference between cage-free and free-range. Most of the cage-free eggs in our country are not coming from free-range conditions. They're coming from birds who are not in cages, but they're in barns where they can walk around and they can lay their eggs in nests, spread their wings, perch. They're not living on necessarily in idyllic conditions, but they are living in better conditions than their counterparts who are locked in battery cages. And I think it's important to remember that 9 out of 10 egg cartons in our country come from these battery-caged birds, so even moving to cage-free is an important improvement in both welfare and food safety.
All right. To Millie, here in Washington, D.C., you're on the air.
Hi, Diane. Thanks. While I'm familiar with the statistics in terms of animal care, how you've been describing the cage sizes and everything, I still do occasionally consume eggs, pork, and beef. And so I wonder, in an attempt to show consumers what the chickens and animals are going through, what would it take to get the graphic images and statements that you sometimes find on cigarette packs and put those on egg cartons?
That's a great question, Millie. In fact, the federal legislation that Paul Souter was discussing earlier had that provision in there that would have required on-carton egg labeling to disclose whether the eggs came from caged hens or from cage-free hens, and that's what they have in Europe, too. Any eggs sold from caged hens in Europe have to be labeled right on the carton, eggs from caged hens. Unfortunately, while most of the egg industry and the animal welfare groups were supportive of this federal legislation, the beef and the pork lobbies lobbied to kill the bill because they presumed that if you have federal anti-cruelty rules for chickens, the next thing you're going to have them for cattle and for pigs as well. So you had a case where such egg carton labeling that you're talking about, Millie, could have been a reality in all 50 states were it not for the lobby of the beef and the pork producers.
Here's an email from Larry in Washington. How does the Humane Society feel about how this affects low-income consumers, since eggs have always been one of the least expensive sources of dietary protein?
Well, what we found at the Humane Society of the United States is that people who are low income, just like everybody else, cares about the food safety of their family, and they certainly care a lot about preventing cruelty to animals. Eggs are a very cheap food. Even with the cost increases that we've seen, you're still talking about less than like a medium coffee for a dozen eggs here. So when you look at the cost of eggs, you recognize that they're not that expensive, but importantly, people at the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum care about feeding their families safe food, and they care about preventing animal abuse, too.
To Araya in Columbus, Ohio, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm also the founder of Vegan Shift, and I have a different perspective on this entire discussion. We're talking about this as if eggs are the only source of protein or animal products, when delicious, nutrient-dense, plant-based egg options exist and are being developed every day. We've got serious problems with animal products. They're the leading cause of most chronic diseases, costing Americans billions, if not trillions, in health care costs and early death. Animal products are not only or even the most optimal source of protein for human health and nutrition.
All right. And Paul Shapiro, where does the Humane Society come out on that question?
Well, thanks for your call, Araya. And you're absolutely right that Americans eat far more animal products than virtually any nation on the face of the earth. And the fact that we're over-consuming animal products is bad for public health, it's bad for animal welfare, and it's bad for the environment. And what we're seeing now, though, in the last several years, is that Americans are starting to eat less and less meat. In fact, in the last 7 or 8 years, per capita meat consumption in the U.S. has actually declined by about 10%. And I think it'll continue declining for a variety of reasons, whether people want to become healthier or they want to align their diets more closely with their morals regarding preventing cruelty to animals.
David Pearson, what are you seeing and hearing in California on that issue?
Well, we're seeing a lot of innovation in the meatless sort of food category.
Sure.
And there's just the cross-section between Silicon Valley and the food industry has been really interesting. You're seeing a lot of innovative products. The vegan shelf used to be sort of the fringe, and now we're seeing companies like Hampton Creek, which does a eggless mayonnaise spread using pea proteins. They were in the news recently because they were sued by the makers of by Best Foods for claiming it was mayonnaise. So they're sort of coming out of the shadows, becoming more mainstream, and getting a lot more attention.
Paul Shapiro, let's talk for a moment about pigs and New Jersey, because the legislature there banned these gestation crates. And then what did Governor Christie do?
Two times in a row, the New Jersey legislature overwhelmingly, in fact, nearly unanimously in a nonpartisan vote, chose to ban gestation crates for breeding pigs. Both times, Governor Christie shamefully vetoed the bill because he was lobbied by Iowa's Governor Terry Branstad, the Iowa Pork Producers Council, and Iowa Republican Steve King to veto the bill. And, of course, Governor Christie cares a lot about what Iowans think as he prepares for his future. And he chose to sell out to the Iowa pork lobby rather than do what his own constituents and the lawmakers of his own party in his own state were pressing for, which is better treatment of pigs.
Paul Souter, I know you want to jump in earlier.
Just back to that other question about the meatless, one of the reasons why the egg industry in demand is going up is because a lot of the families, like one day a week, are having meatless dinners and are substituting eggs for that meatless meal. So that's another good reason why the egg consumption is going up in this country.
All right, let's go to Julia in Detroit, Michigan. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you, Diane. It's a privilege to speak with you.
Thank you.
We talked about the vast commercial farms in this country, and they're there to meet the demand. The intelligent question that needs to be asked by you today, and only you could ask it, is how does this new legislation help us to meet the million eggs we are short every day in this country to help the underprivileged, the institutionalized, the lower income, the middle income, to afford a dense protein meal.
Now, Paul Souder, I asked you about this earlier as to whether, in fact, there is a shortage in this country.
No. I would say that there has not been a shortage in this country. In fact, we're exporting eggs to Mexico. We're exporting eggs to Canada. There is enough of eggs produced in this country to meet the consumers of this country.
Julia, I'm not sure where your information is coming from. Say more.
Well, thank you, Diane. My information comes because I'm part of a crew that actually does the install for conveyors that get the eggs from the chicken to the processing plant. It's really not done by little Amish gals with babushkas.
No, I understand that. But where does your information come from regarding your statement of being a million eggs short per day?
The farm owners.
From owners, Paul Souder.
No, Diane, with all the production that we have in this country, we're able to donate eggs to food banks on a weekly basis. We're donating to food banks in our local area, and at Easter time, the industry donates thousands of eggs to food banks all across the country to help those that aren't as well off and are looking for that nutrition meal.
Paul, tell me about why you prefer a federal law.
We market into about 20 different states, my company itself. And so if each state is going to have a specific law that regards to the production practice of that state, how do I match up my production to the demands of that state? Well, that's why we need a level, uniform law across the whole country that doesn't disrupt this intercommerce that we need in this country.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Would a federal law, Paul Shapiro, help straighten this whole thing out? And how likely are we to get that?
Well, let's answer in reverse. The second answer is not likely. For a variety of reasons. Most importantly, the beef and the pork lobbies are adamantly against it and have succeeded in killing that bill for the time being. However, it would be a benefit because there ought to be federal rules for how we treat farm animals. We have certain federal laws, for example, that relate to the treatment of many animals in laboratories. We have federal rules that relate to the treatment of some farm animals in slaughter plants. But for the 99% of their lives before they reach the slaughter plant, while they are on these animal factories, there are no federal rules for their treatment. And the fact that there are no federal and often no state rules has left this up to the egg producers or the beef, or the veal or the pork producers. And that situation of no rules has led to the extraordinarily abusive conditions that we're seeing now.
All right. To Tom in St. Louis, Missouri, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to add, what tipped me off to call was when, I think it was Paul, said that I'll start producing more cage-free eggs when the consumer starts demanding more cage-free eggs and stops buying the other ones. I agree with this completely, and for the record, I'm very much an animal welfareist. I have a flock of my own chickens, of 12 chickens my kids and I raise in our backyard. I get the animal welfare thing, and our chickens mean a lot to us, and our animals mean a lot to us, but moderation and keeping a middle ground on this is so important. Some big overarching law that, and I'm sorry, that's supposedly stopped by these big, bad, ugly guys at the meat lobbies. The HSUS is just as much of an aggressive lobbyist group as anybody else, and very few politicians want to be cited as siding with somebody who's against somebody who's sticking up for animals. So the politics make this all ugly, but the consumer will dictate what happens in big business and in any business producing a product that's being consumed. And I think that's where everybody needs to take their energy is, if you want these eggs, buy the cage-free eggs, but you can't ignore the magnitude of this issue. And there are a lot of people out there that don't have $6 for a dozen organic cage-free eggs.
You bet.
Thanks so much, Tom. And I agree with you that consumers are a big part of this equation. At the same time, there are some things that we as a society do to animals that are so heinous that we just ought not permit them. So, for example, in our country, we've already stipulated that we think it's so cruel and inhumane to take two chickens and put them in a ring for a couple minutes and allow them to fight each other that it's a crime to engage in cockfighting in all 50 states in our country. And if that is so bad to do to chickens, why should we then take eight chickens and put them in a cage where they can't even spread their wings for their entire lives? That should also not be permitted.
So, Paul Souter, are you considering moving to cage-free hens?
We have increased our cage-free production over the last 5 years, every year by about 20%, and we'll keep growing. And we work with HSUS together. If they have an account that is looking for cage-free eggs, they come to us and we supply them with the cage-free eggs. And so, we're increasing our flock size every year
but
about
clearly
20%.
Pennsylvania is not one of the states that is allowed to export to California. Is that correct?
I'm selling my cage-free eggs to California currently today.
Your cage-free eggs,
yeah. I just sold a load today.
Right. But as a state, Pennsylvania has not agreed to be part of this entire program.
As far as the law on the Prop 2,
right.
No. But I can have chickens at 116 square inches in confinement and meet the California food safety rules, and I can ship them to California.
Paul Souter, Paul Shapiro, and David Pearson, thank you all for a most interesting discussion, and thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.